Welcome and thanks for being with us. Today is Thursday, October the 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face off for their final debate. But what about Trump's claims of a rigged election? And what are people saying about it on social media? Also ahead, a country music collaboration. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the third and final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is now in the history books. And one of the many things to come up, the issue of whether or not Donald Trump will accept the outcome of the election.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing. The New York Times actually wrote an article about it that they don't even care. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters. But unfortunately for them, I think the voters are seeing through it. I think they're going to see through it. We'll find out on November 8th, but I think they're going to see through it.
But, sir, there's
If you look, excuse me, Chris, if you look at your voter rolls, you will see millions of people that are registered to vote. Millions. This isn't coming from me. This is coming from Pew Report and other places. Millions of people that are registered to vote that shouldn't be registered to vote. So let me just give you one other thing. So I talk about the corrupt media. I talk about the millions of people. Tell you one other thing. She shouldn't be allowed to run. She's guilty of a very, very serious crime. She should not be allowed to run. And just in that respect, I say it's rigged.
And here's Clinton's response.
Well, okay. Chris, let me respond to that because that's horrifying. You know, every time Donald thinks things are not going in his direction, he claims whatever it is rigged against him. The FBI conducted a year-long investigation into my emails. They concluded there was no case. He said the FBI was rigged. He lost the Iowa caucus. He lost the Wisconsin primary. He said the Republican primary was rigged against him. Then Trump University gets sued for fraud and racketeering. He claims the court system and the federal judge is rigged against him. There was even a time when he didn't get an Emmy for his TV program 3 years in a row, and he started tweeting that the Emmys were rigged against
him. Should have gotten it.
This is a mindset. This is how Donald thinks. And it's funny, but it's also really troubling.
Okay.
Now, that is not the way our democracy works. We've been around for 240 years. We've had free and fair elections. We've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them. And that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election.
All right, let's dig on deeper now here. Joining me for debate analysis, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, what are your initial thoughts?
It's going to be all about this question to Donald Trump. Will you accept the election results? It's a longstanding U.S. political tradition. No one has ever questioned it like he appears to be. And his reluctance to commit, as you just heard in the clip you played, is going to, I think, dominate the campaign story now for the next several days. I'm just looking at the screen here, and CNN has an instant poll of debate watchers, and they're already giving that Clinton winning that one 52-39, I think. Now, again, instant polls.
Right.
Take it with a grain of salt. But the fact is that Trump came into this debate a national average 7 points behind. He needed to do something to shake it up. I think he has drawn, you know, more attention to the controversies that continue to bedevil him. He also said near the end of the debate, interrupting Clinton when she was giving an answer that was kind of attacking him on his business practices, he said something like, "such a nasty woman," and he pointed at her. And that will also resonate. So, again,
why
the headlines.
Do you say that?
Well, because it's going to be those kind of confrontations that resonate with viewers, that sticks in their minds.
Right.
And we've had a number of them in these three debates now. The debates are over. So the opportunities to change the narrative are pretty much at an end.
Right.
But I think this refusal to pledge that you'll accept by the results, that's going to dog him now for the next several days.
And what if he does refuse to accept the results and he doesn't win? What have we ever seen anything like that?
Well, we already have Republicans, including, you know, Mike Pence, his vice presidential running mate, tried to assure people that he would certainly abide by the results. Even his campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, said that. So he's running contrary to what his own inner circle is saying. I think you're going to see more and more Republicans now, you know, calling on him to kind of try to walk that back, because they're not just worried about Trump's fate in the election on November 8th. They're worried about losing their grip on both the Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives in terms of the congressional election. So I think we're going to see a lot of activity now in the last 2.5 weeks of the campaign.
So overall, you don't, it sounds like you don't think Donald Trump did himself any favors as far as gaining any more support?
You know, he was effective at times going after Clinton on some of the WikiLeaks revelations. One particular moment he had that was strong was when she talked about her experience of 30 years in government, and he said, well, it's been bad experience, and we need to do change, and I'm an agent of change. I think that will resonate, that may resonate with some independent voters, but most of what he did, I think, resonates with his own political base. But that's the problem. He's at 38, 40%. He needs to grow it by 7, 8, 9%. And I'm not sure what he did tonight is going to do that. It may raise even more questions about those undecided voters who wonder now, why won't this man pledge to accept our system as it is?
All right. Well, we always appreciate your perspective. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, thank you so much. Let's turn now to see what's trending online about the debate with VOA's Andrew Palczewski. Andrew, great to talk to you, of course. What is the word on social media? I can only imagine.
Yeah, good to be here with you. It's interesting, as the debate's gone on, we saw these terms kind of pop up as the issues came up. So we saw the Supreme Court trending, saw Vladimir Putin trending, Syria. Even moderator Chris Wallace getting a lot of praise for trying to keep the candidates as best he could on task and asking some very tough questions. But there are certain terms that have kind of trended throughout the night, one of which we were speaking about before we came in here into the newsroom, which is Bigly, B-I-G-L-Y. People debating, was Donald Trump using this so-called made-up word, or was he trying to say big league? So there's a lot of debate about that. That's kind of a silly conversation, but there is two kind of parallel conversations going on about two things that Donald Trump said that people are not happy about. One is that comment that Jim mentioned where he said that Hillary Clinton was such a nasty woman. Nasty woman is trending now. And it is, as Jim said, resonating with voters. I've seen a few tweets where women have said, I'm a nasty woman and I'm voting on November 8th. So they're using this phrase to try to galvanize people and motivate people to vote.
Gotcha.
The other one is bad hombres, saying that we have some bad hombres coming into the country with the immigration system being broken. People already planning bad hombre Halloween costumes and some things, but people, aside from the jokes.
Do you think that was offensive to some people?
Well, that absolutely. For some people, they did find it very offensive, and that's the kind of flip side of that. There are the jokes that are going on, but on the other side, there are people saying it's an offensive term, that it's going to further alienate Latinos, which is a group that Donald Trump has not been doing well with. And then that phrase, I'll keep you in suspense, people very concerned about that. But again, on the flip side, it's kind of stoked the conspiracy theorists. A lot of Trump supporters are saying, well, if it is a rigged election, then he shouldn't have to support it. So that is kind of generating that conversation and that hashtag rigged system. So lots of coming out of this debate. We'll see which of these kind of stick. The terms tend to kind of ebb and flow. We'll see which ones grow over the next few days.
Is there any indication from what you're seeing with all the comments on social media who people feel won the debate?
You know, it can be hard to ascertain that sometimes just because it is so partisan and you have people that are very much in either the Clinton camp or the Trump camp, and they're going to defend regardless of how their candidate performed. But that being said, I think some of these comments that we're seeing popping up as trending terms are against Donald Trump, highlight maybe missteps that he made in the debate, things that he probably, I don't know if he would take them back if he could, but certainly aren't going to get him a lot of favorable publicity and favorable attention. So I think in that regard, I think a lot of people saying that Donald Trump lost the debate, or at least Hillary Clinton kind of held her own, held where she needed to be throughout the course of the debate.
All right. Well, we appreciate it as always. VOA's Andrew Palczewski. Thanks so much. Oh, and you can follow him, by the way, and please do, at APAL.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, as Donald Trump slides in many of the polls, he's, again, as we've been talking about, ramping up allegations of a rigged election. Hillary Clinton, Democrats, non-white voters, and the media, Trump has said, are colluding to tilt the system against him. And that, he says, is culminating in large-scale voter fraud. But what about these claims? Joining me to talk about that, Edward Foley, an election law expert at Ohio State University's Moritz College of Law. Thank you for being with us. So could the election be rigged?
So I define a rigged election in terms of intentional efforts to achieve a result in the election that is different from what the voter wanted. It's a manipulation of the counting process or the process of casting ballots, so it upsets the mechanics of the voting procedure to yield an outcome that is different from the voter's authentic choice.
So is it possible that this election could be rigged, as Donald Trump seems to allege?
It's extraordinarily unlikely that any statewide election could be rigged in terms of this kind of systematic effort to manipulate the results. And it's especially unlikely with respect to a presidential election, because the way presidential elections work is that they are 50 different state elections. It's not just one big national election. So the risk of this is exceedingly low, but it's not zero. American history shows that there have been attempts to try to manipulate the outcome and to subvert the results. Thankfully, they're usually unsuccessful, and they're much fewer now than they were, say, in the 19th century. The farther back you go in the past, the more of this type of activity there was. In the second half of the 20th century and up until now, these kinds of efforts have diminished. I think the proper way to think about this is both Americans themselves and anybody interested in understanding the way American elections work should have a very high degree of confidence that America can operate free and fair elections, and we'll do so this year. But at the same time, the system isn't completely perfect, and the system has to be built in such a way as it is to assume that there may be some bad actors out there, as there have been in the past, who would like to subvert the system.
Now, Donald Trump claims that there really is a problem now with widespread fraud, that people, deceased people, are voting. Is there any evidence to substantiate his claims that he's 100% sure there is widespread fraud happening?
No, his rhetoric and the rhetoric of that nature, unfortunately, in this particular election year, is way overstated, irresponsibly so. Egregiously so.
But what about the claims that it is rigged? Not that it could be rigged, but that it is being rigged. That it is there.
Yeah,
you know that this is happening right now.
No, that's incorrect. I mean, I think that's demonstrably incorrect in terms of the way our system works, and perhaps reflects a misunderstanding of the process. I mean, again, the process is extremely decentralized. You have 50 states. You have all the localities within the states that each operate elections. There isn't any evidence to suggest or reason to believe that the various election officials who run American elections are intentionally trying to manipulate the outcome, whether at the local level or at the state level. To make the kind of claim that he's making, he would have to be accusing Republican secretaries of state who have reacted against his claim that they were trying to rig the election against him, and we've seen Republican secretaries of state in the last couple of days denounce those claims. At the same time, I think it is important to step back from the rhetoric of the week in the moment to realize that there are weaknesses and the kind of anomalies in the American system, especially compared to systems internationally, that we shouldn't lose sight of.
So is the percentage of voter fraud in this country relatively low?
Yes. Again, it matters what type of fraud. And again, fraud is a term that's used loosely. One type of fraud that gets a lot of attention is so-called voter impersonation fraud, which has this idea that somebody's going to go to a polling place and pretend to be another registered voter and to kind of cast that other voter's ballot. The very strong evidence is that that's minuscule. Sometimes you hear the phrase that you're more likely to be hit by lightning than to have that kind of incidence of fraud. There's widespread agreement among election scholars that that is not a significant risk of any type, and efforts to say otherwise, again, are irresponsible and are not evidence-based. And so insofar as the claims this week, and some of them by Mr. Trump and others, have been based on that kind of voter impersonation fraud, that's just not true, and it's demonstrably not true. And it's important to say that and to...
All right. Well, that's Edward Foley, election law expert at Ohio State University. Thank you for being with us. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The FBI and Czech police arrest an alleged Russian hacker linked to the U.S. attacks. The U.S. and South Korea are tightening their alliance to counter nuclear threats from North Korea. A second California man gets 30 years for trying to aid Islamic State. And the Smithsonian launches an effort to save Wizard of Oz ruby slippers. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Now to the fight for Mosul, where the Iraqis and Kurdish Peshmerga forces continue to advance faster than expected, according to U.S. and Iraqi officials. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Iraqi and Kurdish forces keep racking up the victories on the outskirts of Mosul, the Islamic State's largest urban stronghold in Iraq. Now these forces are being urged not to go so fast that they give an opportunity to Islamic State fighters to stall the progress. U.S. General Gary Valesky.
I'm not telling the Iraqis to rush to Mosul. I'm telling them, you know, you've got the momentum, sustain the momentum, continue to put unrelenting pressure on the enemy, and then the enemy's going to break.
The fight will not be easy. This video posted by Islamic State's media arm purports to show the terror group's fighters putting up stiff resistance around the city. The group has built several defenses along the way, including a patchwork of tunnels like the one seen here, meant to allow IS fighters to move around without being detected by coalition aircraft. Military officials say they expect Islamic State to fight with a conventional defense in Mosul until they lose the city. After that, they say, Islamic State will act more like an insurgency. As thousands flee the fighting areas around Mosul, experts caution Iraqi and coalition forces to remember the lessons learned from the last Iraq war, which left Iraq politically unstable and led to a degradation of security. Trevor Thrall spoke to VOA via Skype.
What reason do we have to expect that things will be more successful this time around when things are so much worse?
The country still remains riddled with sectarian tension, and political disagreements continue to keep the Iraqi government floundering. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
And you're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Join us for VOA's coverage of the most important U.S. political event of the year. Americans will decide who their next president will be. We'll have all the context, commentary, and analysis with our coverage of the U.S. presidential election. Right here on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. The United States has expressed its concern over the reported sentencing of dual U.S. citizens, Siamak Namazi and his father, Bakar, who both received 10-year prison sentences in Iran for what a court there called cooperating with the hostile American government. Sharam Akbar Zadeh, an Iranian analyst for Australia's Deakin University, talks to VOA's Victor Beatty about what this all means.
This is a broad pushback
by the conservatives and the hardliners. It has affected NGOs and civil society organizations. Many of them have been shut down. And many of the activists, especially women activists, have been called in for questioning and been treated quite harshly. And of course, dual nationals are an easy target because they can be accused of having divided loyalties or even worse, working for a foreign government.
Are they threatened by the flood of European trade and investment delegations that seem to be arriving regularly in Tehran?
I think they aren't so much threatened by the investment. They are more threatened and feel threatened by what these delegations and what these foreign investment will bring. They are a lot more concerned with social and political challenges that would follow economic relations with the West.
Those detained, are they perhaps bargaining chips for any future deals Iran may want to work out with the West?
They could serve that purpose, but I don't think that their arrest was planned in that fashion. It's really about domestic politics, not about foreign exchange and foreign policy.
Were you surprised by this power struggle after the Iran nuclear deal? I thought Iran was going to be integrated with the global community once this deal was done.
It is somewhat surprising, but I think the writing was on the wall when the Supreme Leader declared that you can't trust the West and you can't trust the United States and Iran remains the enemy of the United States. So I guess the writing was on the wall that it's not going to be a straightforward path. And of course, what has made it even more complicated is that Iran still suffers from international sanctions that are slapped on it because of its support of terrorism and because of its ballistic missile tests, which the U.S. has argued contravenes the intention, Iran's commitment to peaceful nuclear energy. So they're arguing that ballistic tests demonstrate Iran's intent on having nuclear bombs.
All right, that's analyst Shahram Akbarzadeh talking to VOA's Victor Beatty.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition on VOA. The Country Music Association, one of the most influential ambassadors of country music in the United States, turns 50 this year. And to honor that milestone, the CMA brought a one-time gathering of 30 artists to record a new song that's already making history. International Edition's Sarah Williams talks about it with Nikki Strong of VOA One.
It's called Forever Country. It's a mashup of three iconic country songs, John Denver's Take Me Home, Country Roads, Willie Nelson's On the Road Again, and Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You. It was recorded in 3 days in Nashville in June with Shane McAnally as the producer.
So how did they choose these three songs?
Well, it's a combination of things. Originally, it was just going to be a song along with a video. But as they were brainstorming, they decided to ask Joseph Kahn, who is the Grammy Award-winning director of Taylor Swift's Bad Blood video, since he was going to direct the video. They said, they asked him, were there any country songs that he would like to do? And after some thought, he was like, you know what? One song really won't capture the rich history of country music, so why don't we do a mashup of like three songs. And that is when the awesome producer Shane McAnally was brought in to make that happen, especially since he is also on the CMA board.
Well, that's a big task to undertake.
Yes, it is. He was scared at first, understandably, despite how talented he is. He considered 40 songs, 40 of them. And, one of his concerns was that country songs have narratives. And so he didn't want to take snippets of songs and then undermine the narrative of each song. He wanted to do each song justice, as well as do the overall mashup justice. The songs he considered were previous CMA Song of the Year winners, or at least were nominated, and had like universal themes that could sound like a love song to the country genre. So these three wound up making it, to make a long story short. And I personally think he did a fantastic job. And I'm not the only one. The song debuted in the number one spot on the Billboard Hot Country Singles chart. It's the third ever to do so. And that also enables each artist that is on that song have a number one hit on the charts as well.
Oh, fabulous.
Yes.
So how did they choose the artists?
Okay, so at first they didn't know how many artists were going to participate and decided to narrow down the list by considering only previous CMA winners. So they wanted artists of then, now, and forever, as they called it. So they reached out to many, and about 30 were able to do it. And the list includes Dolly Parton, Miranda Lambert, Alabama, Charlie Pride, Luke Bryan, Willie Nelson, to name a few. The song is great, as I said, as well as the video that goes along with it. And also all the profits from the sale and streaming of the song go towards music education sponsored, supported by the CMA Foundation.
Well, you can hear Forever Country by artists of then, now, and forever on VOA One's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also see the video on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're welcome.
And
all right, that's going to do it for this edition of International Edition. But you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There has been significant progress in the fight against ISIL on the ground, and the next big offensive is now underway, the battle to liberate Mosul from ISIL oppression. The operation to regain control of Iraq's second-largest city will take time. Iraq is supported by a wide range of coalition capabilities, including air support, artillery, intelligence advisors, and forward air controllers. The coalition has built a force of over 30,000 fighters for this operation, including Kurdish Peshmerga, Iraqi security forces, and some 14,000 local Nineveh fighters. This liberation battle comes after more than 2 years of ISIL oppression in Mosul, during which they committed horrible atrocities. Over a million people in Mosul are living under the boot of ISIL, including most of the Yazidi slaves who were taken by ISIL 2 years ago. ISIL is also on the run in Syria. Opposition forces there liberated the Syrian town of Dabiq from ISIL control, aided by support from Turkey and the international coalition. Dabiq held symbolic importance to ISIL. The group carried out unspeakable atrocities in Dabiq, named its English language magazine after the town, and claimed it would be the site of a final victory for the so-called caliphate, said U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter in a written statement. In the military operation to drive ISIL out of Manbij, Syria, coalition fighters uncovered a trove of ISIL's foreign fighters and information about where they're planning and plotting their strategy. Coalition forces uncovered over 15 terabytes of material. This intelligence is being mined and shared with global coalition members. Aside from territory, ISIL is losing its leaders. Since August 30th, the United States has taken out more than 18 ISIL leaders, including Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's deputy, Mohammed Adnani, who was the leader of all their external operations. After the fall of Manbij, many of ISIL's leaders left wherever they were and gathered elsewhere. It is clear that ISIL is on the run, and its safe haven is shrinking rapidly. The United States and its coalition partners will not rest until the job is done and ISIL is utterly and completely defeated.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.